Hello, Acid Horizon patrons. This is Craig here. This is our informal discussion of Proust and Signs with Taylor Adkins and Cooper of Machinic Unconscious Happy Hour. Also, Will joins us for this discussion too. This episode is about one of Deleuze's texts that I'm a little bit less familiar with. Taylor has read it. Cooper and Will are kind of coming at it for the first time too. In this episode, we are using some of the tools that we've gotten from other readings of Deleuze to interpret the text in focus. Now, if you're not a patron, you're going to get about the first 15 to 20 minutes of this episode. So if you want to hear the rest, for as little as $1, you can hop onto our Patreon account and get all of the exclusive content that we already have behind the scenes. For the most part, that includes an RSS feed of full episodes that we have already recorded earlier this year. So hop aboard if you're interested. We would love to have you there. Okay, let's go to the discussion. Episodes a little bit differently every time. Like sometimes I just blast it. Like here's the standard episode. Boom, there's the theme music. Here's what we're doing. And then boom, you know, like I just try to mix it up just to keep it interesting. And whenever Taylor's been on, I'm just like, all right, we got Taylor in the studio and let's check in on the conversation.
That's kind of how me and Coop go. We just start talking and then eventually he'll hit the record button and I feel my spidey senses start tingling a little bit and I'm like, all right.
All this will probably get cut out, but you never know. You never know. Like one day I might feel adventurous and then the green room discussion is online. But you guys saw all those questions that I sent you, right?
Yeah, I can pull them up.
What have you read of Proust, Taylor?
What have I read of Proust? I had to read more Proust than I really wanted to because of the Machinic Unconscious.
Right.
So I've had, you know, I had the three volumes in French, which are beautiful, tiny, tiny font volumes, but they're amazing. I had to have those along with, I was using the most recent Penguin translations. It has different translators, but the first volume is by Lydia Davis, who herself is a famous translator and fiction author. And that one I have read pretty much cover to cover. The other books I've kind of just jumped in and out of, so I can't say that I am. I have not completed my search of lost time.
I think though that like we're going to be focusing primarily on the literary mechanisms present in Proust.
Yes.
Especially if we're going to be oscillating, I'd imagine, between Proust and Signs and the later essays in Machinic Unconscious, which is, you know, going to be, I don't want to say idiosyncratic, because that, you know what I mean? Like literarily virtual.
Yeah, I don't mind any direction we go. Here's what I'm worried about, though. Given the density of this very small book, you know, like just getting our head around what's inside this book is a challenge.
Well, that's why I think your questions are great, specifically because they function as that sort of, you know, I had a philosophy professor in undergrad. He's like, I don't give a shit if you Google this text and read the Wikipedia page before you open it up. Like you need some sort of primer. You know, he was talking about the selection of being in time. And one thing that that this episode can serve as, and what a lot of your Concepts and Focus episodes do, and like the other Guattari episode with Taylor, was that they're great ways to initially get sort of your feet wet with the content present in these relatively difficult works. So I think if we don't stray too far from the questions.
Well, your first question, Craig, about whether we need to have read Proust to read Proust and Signs by Deleuze. I think it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, I would say no, with the caveat that that becomes much more plausible if one is at least familiar with some of Deleuze's works. I mean, Will brought it up earlier about difference repetition, obviously the Image of Thought chapter, for example, but you know, there's other stuff too, where you'll see, you know, I mean, you brought up Body Without Organs at the end, in the middle of the book too, he's kind of flirting with this question of organic totality and Platonism and how Proust kind of subverts a lot of that. So you have these themes, and then there's other themes about becoming woman, et cetera, that we see, in A Thousand Plateaus. So if there is a, a mild familiarity with Deleuze, that definitely helps. Now, if one has never read Deleuze or Proust, I do feel like it's still an eminently readable book. It just, I think that you're going to need a minimum, and this is with basically any text. You know, you could say like Gadamer's, you got to have a kind of horizon of sort of understanding hermeneutic, like prejudging. But if you don't have any of that, I don't necessarily think, I would say this is like one of the best intros to Deleuze. But given those two caveats, given that there needs to be at least kind of a minimum.
I would say even for me, like having, you know, Deleuze is definitely fairly newish ground for me. And I felt like this was a good intro because you get a little bit of Bergson, you get a little bit of Nietzsche, mm-hmm. you get a little bit of like, just like I said, kind of a general semiotic approach to the text. And it's very readable. It's not like, it's pretty clear on so much of the content.
It doesn't feel as difficult as, yeah. It doesn't feel as difficult as like difference repetition. I mean, that
nowhere near as difficult. And I think the narrative, even not having read the book at all, Proust, no exposure to Proust whatsoever, I was able to glean enough just through like Deleuze's commentary.
Yep.
To make it a valuable read. I enjoyed the hell of it. I mean, I thought it was like some of the most beautiful prose. Like it was almost poetic at times.
And also I think what you see is the inversion of Platonism and the attack on Kantianism, but uses of Kant, right?
Yeah.
And uses of Plato, reappropriation of terms and concepts from them. So maybe what we can do is actually, Taylor, in, you know, as best as you can, maybe you could give us just like a brief synopsis, like what is Proust doing in that book In Search of Lost Time? What is the sort of elevator pitch for that book?
This kind of goes back to Will's comment to try to summarize like the movement of the narrative would be very difficult, but I will summarize it. Instead of the way that maybe Deleuze does it, Guattari makes it very clear that, his reading in the second part of Machine and Conscious is focused on juxtaposing the, I would say there's two kind of, there's really not just two, but if we wanted to simplify as much as possible, there's two sort of main protagonists for In Search of Lost Time, given the hundreds of characters. So, I mean, like you have Swan and that's who we start with. And, you know, Swan is sort of, he is this more or less, you know, bourgeois man of culture and taste, and he is exposed to this to these movements in art. He's kept abreast of all these movements, and he's kind of like an art critic, so to speak. And he's kind of the foil for the narrator who will be the true hero of the text, and so if you can even call it that, insofar as Swan will sort of become madly in love and fall madly in love, but this is what Guattari says, like he has everything there to become either a great thinker or critic or even a great artist himself, except that he gets kind of caught in this black hole around this passional kind of gravitational pull for this love, and it becomes this neurotic collapse and he fails. And so he's kind of a foil for the narrator who seemingly is falling into the same traps. But for Guattari, it is this exposure to this kind of machinic proposition, so to speak, to put that in scare quotes, by this sort of minor composer, fictional composer named Von Tuil. And it's this little phrase from, you know, that's what Proust will call it, this little musical phrase from Von Tuil's works that at first kind of burrows a hole, if you will, kind of sometimes the way jingles do and into the narrator's head, but then it kind of lays dormant but it ferments and then it crystallizes and it produces these unintended consequences that lead him to be able to thwart and ward off that same failure that we see Swan succumbing to, and thereby through these great efforts and through, you know, seven books later, finally, he kind of he's able to access that realm of art and become the great artist that he had set out to be. That's just one of the movements, and that really doesn't summarize at all the book.
Right.
But for Guattari, he's going to focus on those two figures, the Swan and the narrator, to describe two different aspects of schizoanalysis: the generative side, which is on sort of the weaker side, working with these less dynamic aspects, and then the transformational side, which we'll see with the narrator. And he, you know, obviously his whole thing is about faciality and refrains, which is two huge components, which even Deleuze hits upon in Proust's Signs.
Does the little phrase have any relation to the refrain? Because that's kind of where my head was going.
Yeah, that Von Tweh's little phrase would be a refrain that isn't able to be reduced either to like its written musicographical, like scriptural component, or even the singular notes, right? It is this kind of crystal of time that holds the semiotic sort of asignifying, agrammatical, metabolic catalyzing key to...